Also, going back to it, what was interesting, you know the history of Stanley Park. I mean, it was published how there was a fight between Vancouver and the CP Rail, the landowners, right? And the federal government owned Stanley Park. And it was basically a lot of posture. It's interesting history, but they didn't want the federal government to do anything with Stanley Park because it would deflate land sales in Vancouver. And Vancouver Sun has very recently published a précis about how Stanley Park came to be preserved, right? And there was a lot of politics and that, but nowadays people say, what if Stanley Park was like the West End, right?
Yes.
Right.
Oh, is that the Carriage book, Inventing Stanley Park?
Could be. I mean, I'm not very good at remembering the sources. I remember weird details, but I'm not much remembering sources. But then prior to Vandersam losing and Harcourt became premier, he did one very interesting thing by fiat, and that is UBC had endowment land, same thing, massive amounts of land and a lot of disputes surrounded by beautiful forest. UBC having plans of saying we're cash strapped, university is always cash strapped, we want to develop, and Vandersam went in, and I'm sure there were environmental organizations out of that side of the city. And then before he was defeated or before he resigned or whatever happened, yeah, because it was Rita Johnson ran for the Socreds, I think he resigned. He did one important thing. He created, by fiat, Pacific Spirit Park. The province decided that there would be a park. End of story, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not sure of Hampton Court. I mean, UBC has developed, I think it's called Hampton Place, or that residential, and the massive amounts of money have gone into endowments for the university. Mm-hmm. But he just simply, the province said, this is going to be a park, massive, beautiful park. So I looked at the fortuitous fact that whatever the politics were at the time, we have Stanley Park, one of the jewels of Canada, and Vandersam made, he made a lot of goofy decisions, but he made one extremely good decision, which was Pacific Spirit Park, which is going to be a wonder of the Lower Mainland. And then I'm sitting here. We have a very similar dynamic happening here. We have 1,000 acres, or whatever the acre, 800, 880, I think it is, because the city already owns Centennial Park, right? The western 300 acres was still city land. Mm-hmm. And this unresolved issue. So I think it was, and I stand to be corrected, after in the 1993 election, I went to Bill Kolick and says, you know, I'm not really happy with the situation in this FEU. I'd like to see if we could resolve some of the issues. Mm-hmm. It's my ultimate goal being getting the lands back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Bill and Kelly, fine. I did something that I don't know if other councillors ever done, because I was a lawyer and English honors guy. I wrote the terms of reference for the committee.
Okay, and now I'm a bit confused, because in the records, it shows that the Simon Fraser Liaison
Committee
was formed in 1991.
All right, so that was after the 1990 election.
But there didn't seem to... Well, see, now that's where my confusion is, because I think you're right that it wasn't until 1993 that negotiations really got going.
Yeah, and think that's what I may have been trying to describe you. And I, like I say, there's so much water under the bridge. I don't have any documentation. So for 91, that when I was actually looking through this, I was trying to decide, like, when did we set up the committee? It would have been in council reports, right?
And you were, of course, the chair, and the other councillors on it were Doug Drummond and Egon Nicolai.
Yeah.
And then eventually Doreen, is it Doreen?
Lawson. Yeah.
Doreen Lawson was the on it.
But here's my reluctance. So council approved it. And see, I don't remember the timeline, but I know we would met with them on an intermittent basis. And we would talk about environmental, the ring road, and fire access. And we'd bring up the land issue, and they kept fobbing us off.
Oh, so that's probably what was going on between 91 and 93.
They kept fobbing us off a lot. Okay. So we did meet with them.
Who would you be meeting with?
Well, I'm not sure when John Stubbs became president, but the
93.
Okay, yep. John Stubbs became president. And the main guy responsible was Jack Blaney from the university side, vice president external, right?
Okay.
I'm not sure where Jack is now. Jack, very smart man, very savvy, very political. So it was 93 Stubbs comes on. Okay. So I guess probably what happened, we met with them, and I think what was happening behind the screen was they were being told, we're not giving this land back. Right? I mean, I think they had a firewall.
Mm-hmm.
Very hardline firewall. And I think the reasons for, there's many reasons for that, that from their point of view, it was given, we're not giving it back. Also, you know, when you think about it, I'm going to try to, Laura, you have to think your position and the other party understand it. You know, I think about Oxford, Cambridge, University of Europe. You're not thinking in 10, 20, 30 year windows. You're thinking maybe in 100, 200, 500 years, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, who knows what your needs are going to be 50 years, 100 years, 200 years down the road. So if I was sitting in as the SFU finance, director of finance or director of lands or whatever, saying, we don't know what's going to happen down the road. We don't know about our funding sources. We don't know anything. We can't give anything, right? I mean, I get it, right? Why would you give back something that had been given to you and there's no way to prove that you were had to give it back the unused portion? And so I could see sitting there, and if depending where I had done my studies, thinking, look at Cambridge, look at Oxford, look at things with hundreds of years of traditions, right? What if they had lands and resources? Can you see into the future?
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, what I really wanted, I think it was a non-starter. We were talking about joint environmental studies and just really peripheral issues, right? So John Stubbs was 1993, and of course there was a civic election in 1993. And I don't know the time sequence of the meetings. I do know it took us a couple of years once we got the talks really going, and it was primarily Drummond, myself, and Jack Blaney. But when I realized that things like weren't really going anywhere, this is what I did, and I'm not sure what point. It happened, but Harcourt, Premier Harcourt, appointed Yvonne Koch to the position of Chancellor of SFU. Yvonne Koch was the wife of Dennis Koch, Dr. Dennis Koch, I think it was. And he had been the Minister of Health under the Dave Barrett NDP government from 72 to 75. And the nickname I knew them was the Koch Machine in New Westminster. They were a political powerhouse team. And Yvonne, I had never met her in her life, but everyone said that she was a force of nature. Like she was iron-willed, the real, you know, metal rod in the spine, right? So I got materials from our staff. I got her maps. I got her some reports for her to read and stuff like that. And I arranged through whatever sources I had probably at the time. And I invited her to lunch down at this Italian restaurant on Water Street, right? Because I was working out of 157 Alexander was my law office. And there was a nice, it's still there, I think. I can't remember the name, Italian restaurant. And sat down and had lunch with Yvonne. And I sat down with her and I went over that and I went over the history as I understood it and went over it. And I said, because, you know, as I say, she was a powerful NDP player and Harcourt obviously, you know, put her chancellor. And I said, we're not getting anywhere. I said, you're the chancellor. You have an NDP government in power. even the council, there's some resistance to doing anything with SFU. We want to do this. How will this be good? Well, Bill Van Der Zandt, you know, the most popular guy from the NDP, created Pacific Spirit Park. And he quote, Mike can take care of this if he wants to, right? Mm-hmm. So I laid it out to both the background and the political. I said, if Mike Hart could do this, it makes the government look good. It's great for Burnaby. SFU, they may not be so happy, but you're the chancellor, right? I had that meeting with her. Maybe a couple months later, we had a meeting with SFU, and it was like night and day. It was completely different. I couldn't believe my ears, where Jack Blaney, I'm not sure if Stubbs was at the meeting or not. I know he attended, but he didn't sit through all the meetings. Suddenly, we were talking about a resolution of the land issue. So after years of nicey-nicey meeting and, you know, like waste of time, we were getting to the meat of the issue. Uh-huh. And it was after that lunch that I stood up with Yvonne. And from there on, I mean, I wanted the land back. I wanted it to be real certain. I wanted it to be city parkland and dedicated city parkland. But there was a problem which we've talked about and understood from the university point of view. You had a desolate place with the zoning, institutional zoning. And I could say the planners are pretty rigid people, kiboshed the village concept. And I'm dealing with an environment that I had lived or worked in of desolation. I had been, I'm not a real worldly guy, as you can tell, but I had been to McGill. I'd been to University of Washington. I'd been to UCal Berkeley. How wonderful, these campuses. And right next, across the street, the bookstores, the coffee shops, the little restaurants, the boutiques, the secondhand book, and the students. And I said, this is wonderful. You can go off campus and go get a bite, and go to a bookstore, and go to a little jazz. It was like, wonderful. I love these U districts, right? Mm-hmm. Compared to the commuter campus, isolated, desolated situation. You get your milk and bread and eggs. You had to get in a car or take the bus to go down to Kensington Plaza, the nearest place. And then I thought, this is just wonderful. This is where university should be, right? And those are only three examples. I'm sure many worldwide where they're ensconced in the communities, they're part of the communities, they feed the communities, the community feeds back, and SFU is like the exact opposite. So we were talking land exchange, and it was over that 2-year period and we started meeting more intensely. And Jack Bellhouse, I mean, obviously we're politicians with different areas of experience. Jack Bellhouse and Basil Luxum were fantastic because they had the technical, the knowledge, the creativity. And Doug Drummond and I had already worked with him on the land exchange with the school board, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of confidence in him, not just from a technical, but the creativity to solve problems when you think they're insolvable. After 2 years of meeting and hard work at the staff level and direction, we got the land back. SFU got some city land outside the Ring Road that we were going to develop into subdivisions, and it had a cash value. I can't remember the exact value. It'll be in the report, $6 million to $10
million. Something like that. And that was around Curtis and Phillips?
Yeah. Okay. All right. And I had to deal with resistance on council. I won't name names. When you off record, I can tell you a bit off record. Resistance, like, why should we give them anything?
And why? Why the resistance?
I'll tell you later.
Oh, okay.
I had to deal with that resistance. So we donated land, which had monetary value.
Right.
And the university, at the end of the day, got the agreement of the city to an official community plan that included market housing and market commercial, I insisted on, and they didn't really fight, they did their homework, that the land never be alienated from SFU. And they went back and they said they were okay with that, because apparently the 99-year leases that they sell condos on are, from a financing point of view, as good as fee simple.
Okay.
But my point of view was, if they were going to be able to build market residential, market commercial, that it not be alienated. That may sound paternalistic, but it's not just the university. I mean, you have kind of a progressive, environmental, sensible council. Two councils later, you get one controlled by real estate developers, right? Mm-hmm. Come saying, well, we would like to build a big box retailer and we want to do 10 more high rises. Sure, whatever, buddy, you know.
Oh, within the ring road, you mean?
Yeah, that's right. That's what I say. If we allowed SFU to alienate the land,
okay,
and sell sites rather than 99-year leases, right? You don't know, 2-3 decades later, you get a developer-controlled council, and the university comes saying, well, we'd like to knock these down and build a Walmart, and we'd like to build 10 high-rises where you've only allowed whatever.
Right.
So.
And wasn't that, I found it interesting that when SFU did the planning development, that it became the SFU official community
OCP,
plan,
yeah,
and that was nested within the city OCP.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That Burnaby is kind of different than many communities. What many communities do, they rezone land for specific purposes, and then people can build whatever they want with it, if they have the zoning for it, right? And they may have plans. Burnaby is different. It approves OCP, right? Their approved official community plan. And then individual rezonings are brought within the context of the community plan. Like a lot of communities, and my information could be out of date, they say, okay, this is industrial land, you zone it, and so they pull the permits. This is residential, this is whatever, once it's zoned, and people come and build. Burnaby doesn't quite do it that way. It approves OCPs,
okay,
and then developments are expected to be zoned in conformity with the approved OCPs, because the OCPs go through a public vetting process, and then the individual zonings go through the rezoning process. So what the city ultimately, all they could promise, and that was an issue for SFU, because the city could say that we'll approve the OCP, but each zoning is a site specific, so the university had to hope that the city was acting in good faith, because each one was subject to a discrete rezoning and continues to be. So a key point in the land exchange for me and the university, obviously did their due diligence, was 99-year leases that they offer the units or sites to are apparently as good as fee simple. That means the university still owns and controls the land. And that was important for both parties.